It is hour number two of Betting Across America, presented by BetMGM. Mike Pritchard with you out here in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're also going to host from Denver, Colorado, with James Salinas out there in a Mile High City. And speaking of Denver, James, this line, the Miami Dolphins is a road favorite to close minus four, actually. Total was at 46. I saw a tweet which was surprising to me, but then I thought about it. I was like, okay, it's not so surprising that the Dolphins were a road favorite for the first time since 2017. And then knowing that building out there in Denver the way that I do, and the pride that they have out there with the Broncos, and certainly the criticism that they faced all year, I thought this would be a pride game for them, and it showed up that way. So I was able to cash a ticket that included the Broncos. What's your thoughts on this game right here?
Well, I didn't understand the game plan from Miami to start with. First, let's start the first part of the game. Mm-hmm. Defensively, Drew Lock, his second pass of the game, gets intercepted. They pick him off. You see him put his head down again. It turns into seven. They punch it in. They get a short field, and they get up seven. Next time out, goes 0-3 throwing the football. They got to punt the football. And then for Miami, here's where playing into trying to figure out before you're going to make these bets on these teams is to try to get in the head of the coaches and think, what is the game plan going to be going into this game? And to me, the game plan really should have been, and I bet that, and that's the one thing I wanted to talk to you about too, is talking about the prop market and trying to build a narrative around the way that you think that these game plans are going to be played out and how these coaches are going to approach this matchup. And in this case, I didn't understand the matchup approach from Miami. I know they don't have a great rushing attack, but Tua going on the road there, the strength of Denver's defense right now, especially because of the injuries, is their secondary. So the last thing you want to do is start to have Tua have to try to go and attack that secondary. That's going to be the strength of the team. They don't have a great pass rush right now. They're missing two of their interior players as well. Casey's not there. They with Casey not being there, as well as Shelby Harris. So interior, to me, that's where he really should have been attacking this football team. They didn't do that. Miami had every opportunity to put Denver away. They had two times where, because of Locke coming out throwing the football the way that he did early, they could have buried that team, but instead they go three and outs, and then it was the third down defense for Miami, that drive where Denver was able to sustain and go and tie the game up. They had a number of third and long plays where they weren't able to get off the field, and then you saw a whole different level of confidence out of the Broncos as that game progressed, because Miami really wasn't able to get off the field on those third downs. Now, Pritch, let me ask you this too. From an NFL or a football perspective, play action passes are designed to hold that pass rush up with the threat of the run, correct?
Yes. Absolutely.
Because Miami had no threat of the run,
right,
yet they're still having their young quarterback take the ball under center, turn, fake the handoff, run the play action pass, turn his back to the defense, and then he turn back around in the pocket and realize he's not even going to be able to see the field because the pass rush now is coming in, because they had absolutely no respect for that play action game because they never established or even tried to establish any kind of running game.
You're right. As a coordinator, is Tua ready for a drop back game plan though? And probably not. I mean, he's kind of have to go through the run motion at this stage of his development. And so I think you're thinking of that, but forgetting, like what you just mentioned, you're forgetting about the fact that, okay, we haven't established a running game yet. So the Broncos, they're not going to bite. They're not going to give on that. And so you look up, okay, six sacks later, you have an ineffective quarterback, a quarterback that's not prepared from a drop back standpoint. There's so much of a difference between a drop back offense, meaning you're going to go through progression as a quarterback, as opposed to going through a RPO or some type of play action where you have a design throw also involved. You know where you want to go with the ball, and a lot of times it's open because it's called at the right time. But if it's not called at the right time, then you got to improvise and make something happen. And Tua can do that. But in a dropback game, when you have to operate from the pocket, he is just not experienced right now to execute that way.
No, I completely agree. And that's where my narrative of this game was I thought both teams are going to be very conservative with the football offensively. Denver needed to run the football, which they finally did. So finally, there was a number of props out there. Yeah, finally, Lindsay, our boy Lindsay got to touch the football. Mm-hmm. You know, his prop yesterday was only it was six carries. Would he get more or less than that? That one was finished at the end of the first quarter. So, and then correlate that with like 26 yards rushing and then looking at some of the props to say, look, they can't have Drew Lock continuously. I think the last four games, he was averaging approximately 44, 45 pass attempts per game. Can't have Drew Lock back there throwing the football that many times. You have to establish some sort of running game. They've got the two-headed monster with Gordon, who still can't hold onto the football, and our boy Lindsay, who runs like it's his last touch in the NFL. He runs as hungry as anybody else in this league. So it was great to see him get off. It was great to actually see Denver execute the game plan, like which would make sense for them and be conducive for a young quarterback like Locke. Take some pressure off, run the football. I mean, they ran the football 31 times between the two with Lindsay and Gordon. That should have been the game plan. That's what was the game plan. Mm-hmm. I was a little concerned with my props early on because the first two drives, there it is, Locke throwing the football, intercepted the first drive. Second drive goes another 0-3. He had started off 0-5 their first six plays. So I was a little concerned, like maybe what I thought the Broncos would do offensively is not going to plan out, but eventually as the game progressed, they were able to get back into the rhythm of running the football, took a ton of pressure off Drew Lock. Now, coming up this weekend, they're going to place a completely different team from a personnel standpoint. When you're talking about the Saints, this is a team that's going to come in, and as long as they show up to play, I think they're now, what Denver did yesterday, that's not going to be something that the Saints are going to sleepwalk through and overlook, so going to be an interesting game to start to break down in Mile High when the Saints come to visit the Broncos.
Right. I mean, I think you got to stick with the run. I mean, Philip Lindsay, he's a home run hitter, first of all. He might get bottled up a few times. Might lose yards, too. But once he finds a crease through the line of scrimmage, he's gone, right? And I think you have to have that mentality if you're the Denver Broncos. This guy, Philip Lindsay, he's a Pro Bowler. He's averaging for his career 5 yards a carry. How does he not touch the ball more? I just don't get that. Or are you just trying to showcase Drew Lock and try to prove to everybody that you made the right selection at quarterback? To me, that's Denver's problem right now. They're trying to prove to everybody how right they are with Drew Lock and forgetting about how to execute offensively.
Yeah, and maybe that's it. Well, and there's been, and it's not just Drew Lock, Pritch. Denver's had, Elway hasn't done the greatest job of assessing quarterbacks through the draft. And
right.
I think this was bringing up visions of Paxton Lynch, Brock Osweiler. Like, it hasn't been very successful since Peyton Manning left as far as is the drafting acumen when it's finding these quarterbacks, and not these late round picks, early round picks, first and second round picks that look like it's a continuous struggle. So maybe that's it. Maybe there's part of it. Maybe it's not just strictly the coaching staff. Maybe there's something coming from upstairs saying, look, we're drafting high. We got to see him. We don't have time to wait. This is not the days of, that young quarterback being able to sit with the clipboard and follow that veteran quarterback and get to learn from him. Now, it's all on the job training right now for these quarterbacks. So they've been throwing Drew Lock into the fire, dropping back 45, 50 attempts per game, too many for most any young quarterback, and especially one that's really shaky with his confidence. So finally Denver executed the game plan that they should have been executing for a number of weeks, but I think because they were falling behind, they kind of scrapped that and say, well, we got to catch up and play catch up to throw the football. And in this case, even though they did fall behind early because of another Drew Lock interception, they stuck with the script, knew they had to have some balance, take the ball out of Lock's hands. He only had 30 attempts yesterday. Yeah. That was really what it was. The prop was 30. So I bet the under in that, just thinking that this is the narrative, this is what they've got to do to be successful. And ultimately, even though they fell behind, like we said, they stuck with the strip and ended up winning the game.
A nice bet by you. Do you believe in Locke at this point, or do you still need to see more games from him?
Well, I think those are the kind of games that are going to help him, because you're going to be able to take the pressure off him to where he doesn't feel like he has to go out and make all the plays and make all the throws. But that's still a learning lesson there, because there were some things that he was talking about, and there was a lot of stuff going on internally talking about. Again, we talked about the front office, the lack of, the problems that they've had drafting consistently any kind of quarterback to take over that position since Peyton Manning left 5 years ago. But now I think from this perspective here, too, there's still a disconnect between it's you know, when you're talking about Fangio and these young players at, you know, they're 22, 24 years old. It's a multiple generation difference between the way players today communicate to where folks that are like Vic Fangio is 63, 64 years old. That's not their style. So it's still not meshing quite that way. I'm not going to jump on one game and say this is now they found the formula for success. Now, I think the formula for success for Denver is to have more balance running the football for sure. But in this case, that's just one game playing against the Miami Dolphins, where the strength of that team also was in that secondary. It's not up front. Going to see a completely different matchup against that Saints front, because that Saints front was absolutely dominant against the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, absolutely. Can't wait to talk about them. Look at what we have here, though. The Chargers score over 30 points. Now, it was against the Jets. His line closed -9.5, total 47.5. Justin Herbert, he's pretty much, wrapped it up in terms of rookie of the year at this point, James.
Yeah, I mean, now Burrow's out of the running, unfortunately, for that kid. So, yeah, I think for sure, as far as Herbert's, he's had the jump, what was it, week two, week three, whenever he got in there because of Tyrod Taylor and all that craziness that went on. It's he's not giving that back. There's not going to be a pull like we saw Tua being pulled yesterday mid-game. Like, that's not going to happen with Herbert. He's going to play out the season. They have their quarterback, and Herbert can make those throws. I mean, he's been very impressive. Here's another quarterback. You don't get to hold the clipboard, kid. You're getting out there. This is your job to lose and go take it down. And he sees the opportunity making throws. He's still going to make mistakes when it comes to decision making, but still 49 attempts yesterday. Now, this was the New York Jets, but 49 attempts, especially for a Chargers team that played ahead basically the entire game. I know they had the block punt and fell behind early, but I mean, this was a 24-6 game at halftime. And again, here's the Chargers finding ways to try to get teams to come back and find a way to come back and beat them. I mean, they gave the Jets almost every opportunity to get back, and they almost did. They got right back in, and it came down to a last possession. But Chargers, again, this is kind of the recipe for most teams, especially with young quarterbacks. We saw it with poor Burrow getting hurt. No balance on offense. We're just going to drop back and sling the football. Not much balance with Los Angeles Chargers rushing the ball either. I know they have some injuries, but still, you still have rushers. You can still hand the football off to somebody. They're still they're a professional on your roster. You got to try to establish some kind of balance. So again, Herbert's a big kid. Now, he can take some shots back there, but anytime you're going to have your young quarterback sitting back there to throw the ball 50 times a game, you're still going to be susceptible not only to bad decisions and some poor passes, but also susceptible to continuously getting hit, because it's not a great offensive line for the Chargers either.
See, and okay, to that point, what are we doing here if you're the Chargers? I mean, you're 3-7. I know Anthony Lane may be trying to hold on to your job, but you probably hold on to your job better if Herbert is healthy by the end of the year. If Herbert gets injured, some type of injury, you name it, right, and he's unable to finish out the year, you certainly are gone. So from an organization standpoint, you know what you have. You know what you have in Justin Herbert. Why are you throwing him out there and certainly having that many pass plays called in a game?
Well, man, maybe that's with Lynn. They needed a win. needed a W. Okay,
sure.
I mean, they beat Jacksonville, and they beat Cincinnati back in week one. So struggling for a win. So sometimes you just, right, Pritch? Maybe you just, we got to get a win under our belt. And like, all right, well, we got that out of the way. Now, again, you just beat the Jets. Much bigger. Now you're going to have to go to Buffalo. We'll look and see what the weather's going to look like out there in Buffalo this come next Sunday. But now they're going to have to go to Buffalo. Buffalo team that's coming off the bye, especially coming off the loss that they had, the way that they lost against Arizona and the Hail Murray. That's going to be an interesting matchup and probably a really tough matchup. So I don't suspect if Burrow's going to throw the ball 49, 50 times like he has been and like he did yesterday against the Jets, that's not going to be a recipe for another win on the road at Buffalo.
How about this question to you, James Salinas? I asked you last week if the Saints were a Super Bowl caliber team without Drew Brees. Taysom Hill's in there. This line closed New Orleans -3.5, total 49. Your thoughts on Taysom Hill and the Saints?
Well, I think as far as the Saints go, Taysom Hill, that was an interesting game plan. I mean, they weren't running the packages that folks suspected. They want to see, I mean, they gave him the extension. They want to see, I think Peyton wants to see, is this going to be the heir apparent for Drew Brees when and if and when he retires, which he probably will this year after the end of the season. But as far as the Saints were concerned, I mean, I really, that game was, Taysom Hill did the things to make them plays to win the football game, but ultimately it was that defense that won the football game for the Saints. I mean, that front four applied so much pressure. They had 8 sacks yesterday, hammered Matt Ryan 11 times. They had 11 passes defended. So it was a complete team effort on the defensive side. Tremendous defensive effort from the Saints against the Falcons. Now they get to come and play. I'm really intrigued by that game coming here to Denver and what that's going to look like for Drew Lock. Because I'll tell you this, if the Saints come with the same intensity. Now that's going to be the thing. It's going to be a sandwich game because they get to play the Falcons again the following week. Not a great spot for the Saints when it comes to the travel and playing the non-conference game. But if they come with the same intensity that they did yesterday, Drew Lock is going to be in for a long day as well.
Absolutely. I think that's the recipe too. When you have a backup quarterback, an unproven backup quarterback like Taysom Hill, you have to have that defense. I think Kwon Alexander was a sneaky good pickup right there by that Saints defense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree. I think they've got themselves in the driver's seat for the number one seed as well. So not many games left to play. You don't want to overlook any teams because you want that number one seed to run to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming up, 7 head coaches on the hot seat. This is clearly one of them. Patricia and the Lions and the Panthers is coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. To the program, Betting Across America, presented by BetMGM. Mike Pritchard with you out here in Las Vegas. James Salinas hosting out there in Denver, Colorado. And James, Matt Patricia, what do you do here? The Lions and the Panthers. Now, first of all, the Panthers, P.J. Walker, fresh off the XFL, beats you down. This line closed Detroit -3. They were actually favorite here, the total 47. And you lose to an XFL quarterback this way, and you're supposed to be a defensive guru. I just don't know what to make of the Matt Patricia situation out there in Detroit.
There's no accountability. We've said it since day one. We've been saying this for the last couple years there with Detroit and Matt Patricia, that until you want to establish a culture of winning, it starts with accountability for performance, and that also includes the coaching staff. And he is never one to look at himself in the mirror. It's always, we need to be better. Our players need to do this. We're still rebuilding. There's a lot of things that I had to clean up coming here, which there really wasn't. I mean, it was 9-7 was his worst year. So from that perspective, there was a team in place. They just thought that Patricia was going to be the one to move them forward into the actual stratosphere of competing for Super Bowls. Now they're competing for the top 5 pick every year, with as long as he continues to coach this football team. This is where it is with Detroit. That's not a team. I know we've talked about a number of teams where there's certain player teams that I'm not going to play because of the coaching acumen there. Mm-hmm. That's one of them with Detroit. I look back at my notes. I'll make notes for each game of pros and cons of the matchup, and they're right there. They're right there. It's like I have it big, bold letters highlighted in yellow. Matt Patricia is head coach, and I don't play it. So from that perspective, they had a few injuries too, but you're right. I mean, P.J. Walker there at the quarterback position, XFL player, XFL, that silly league last year. This perspective, too, is don't forget also at the quarterback position, be up front for him. He had 3 backups that were playing on the line of scrimmage, playing offensive line, left tackle, left guard, right guard. All 3 were undrafted players, so no experience, not a lot of talent up there. Matt Rhule absolutely did a tremendous job of having his players ready to play, no excuses for injuries. That team stepped it up and did whatever they had to do to win that game. They wanted it more clearly. Right now, Detroit doesn't want to be out there. there. They don't want to play for Matt Patricia. There's no leadership right now, no intensity out of this team. Now you've got a short turnaround. You're going to, yeah, you get to play at home, playing on Thanksgiving, coming in and playing Houston, which has its own issues too. But at this perspective, probably Detroit right now is glad that there's no fans in the stands, because that might be really ugly when it comes to the Boo Birds coming down on Matt Patricia.
Yeah, should an NFL coach be allowed to learn on the job? I think Patricia had some comments to that effect. I need to learn how to be a better head coach. No, you're supposed to be a good head coach before getting hired. That's how it works in the National Football League. This is a high-performance business, and he's certainly not getting it done. The Steelers-Jaguars, 27-3. This close, -10.5 for Pittsburgh, total 47.5. Steelers slow rolling right there a little bit, but they got in gear and took care of business against the Jaguars.
Yeah, it's slow starting, to be expected. I mean, they're playing the Jaguars. We see the Jaguars, they're competing every week. Obviously, the roster is the most depleted of talent in the NFL. And so they're still going to come out and play hard. But I think more so it's because their opponents just don't bring the same intensity. But it doesn't take long for a team like Pittsburgh to turn it on. And I think they learned their lesson a couple weeks back when they were a huge favorite against the Cowboys. That game closed over 2 touchdowns. So, and that came down to the last drive for them to squeak out that game. I think they learned their lesson. And I think credit to Mike Tomlin. I mean, that could have been that's the ultimate sandwich spot right there when we're talking about scheduling for Pittsburgh. Last week, division game against Cincinnati. Yeah, not a good team anymore for Cincinnati, but it's still Cincinnati. Those teams don't like each other. And you have a short week, Thanksgiving, another division rival that you don't like and don't like each other, and great rivalry in the AFC North with Baltimore on Thursday, you know, for Thanksgiving. Now you've got to go play on the road against a really bad Jacksonville Jaguars team. Credit to Mike Tomlin getting his guys focused. They've, you know, didn't get off to a great start, but it didn't take them long to flip the switch. Let's get after it and let's go dominate this football team like we're fully capable of. Those are the kind of things that championship teams, you're going to have a flat quarter, even a flat half, but championship teams find a way to get themselves, get their mind right, get themselves straight, and go win those games. That's exactly what Pittsburgh did yesterday.
Big Ben's, he's amazing. He's having a great year, maybe MVP type of year. Concerns about their running game, real quick, James?
Yeah, well, no balance. Yeah. I mean, I think the running game's there. They just don't want to do it. They keep slinging the football. Got to keep Big Ben upright, but they do have a terrific offensive line as well.
They do, and a terrific defense as well. The Pittsburgh Steelers up next. Ben Fox, VP of Digital Content right here at VSiN. He's going to help us go over some of the betting action that took place over the last weekend and also kind of preview Monday Night Football as well. That's coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Betting Guide is out today, and now is the perfect time to become a VSiN subscriber. Get this massive, in-depth guide to all the teams, conferences, and impact players for this unique college basketball season. It has predictions, insights, stats, and research from all our VSiN basketball experts, and you'll want to dive in before the first games tip off this week. Get the Hoops Betting Guide plus everything VSiN has to offer every day of the basketball season all year round at a 25% savings right now. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe. Welcome back to the program. It's Betting Across America presented by BetMGM, Mike Pritchard, James Salinas, and Ben Fox. How are you?
Good. It's good to be back in the studio.
Great to have you back in the studio. Do you have a favorite basketball team in college basketball this year?
I actually do not. Growing up in New York City, college basketball not the biggest thing, and certainly going to a D3 school as well in California. It, you know, we had a lot of intense rivalry games but it's Division III, so yep. Not necessarily the same. In short, no.
Okay.
I've done some prep. We'll obviously have our college basketball guide coming out later today on VSiN.com and for subscribers, but no, not a college basketball giant fan yet. Usually I get going towards, you know, February and March before the tournament.
Right.
No favorite teams yet.
I'm partial to UNLV, having grown up here and
yep.
went to school with Greg Anthony, and got to go to the Final Four out there in Denver, James, McNichols Arena, and watch the Running Rebels beat down Duke.
I remember that game. That was 1990. It was yeah. down at Big Mac. It was the last, you know, that was the last game, I think, that they ever played in an arena like that. Everything now is at the big football stadiums, but that was the last one. And Brent Musburger, I think that was Brent's last game with CBS as well. I remember that game. We were, was I in college or was high school? I forget, but we had our fun running around downtown. We were Vegas fans back then, too. So we had our fun, and we actually, we knew a guy that knew a guy that would take our action back in the day.
Nice.
So we had a lot of fun running around Lodo. Now, Lodo was different back then than mm-hmm. it is now, but I clearly remember that game. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Great times out there. I was in college up the road in Boulder, so made the drive down to watch that intense matchup. Well, it wasn't so intense, so the Rebels kind of blew them away. But let's get back to some notable bets, Ben. From this past weekend, because you're a great follow on Twitter for sure, but some of these notable bets that came in.
Yeah, first I was going to say, we're going to have like a college, you know, stories. I feel like I've come on a couple times here, and you you and James are like on the edge
okay.
of telling, you know, telling one. We're going to need a little story time with Pritch and James at some point here.
We can do that, James.
But
we'll have to make that one of the podcasts. This is a family show,
there
so we'll have to script that out to make sure there's certain things that we know are not suitable for certain listeners. But that'd be fun. That'd be a fun podcast, actually.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, yeah, certainly a lot of notable bets over the weekend. I think some of the biggest ones that were unfortunate were on the Bengals. So there was one at BetMGM, 110,000 on them plus 1.5. And again, they probably win and cover that game if Joe Burrow is in the whole time. I think they had one of the most impressive first half offensive 9-7 leads at halftime I've ever seen. They were just dominating the game, moving up and down the field, couldn't really punch it in for those scores. Joe Burrow gets hurt in the third quarter. There's also a notable bet out of Borgata in New Jersey. One bettor had $100,000 on the Bengals second half line
okay.
at Pick'em. Obviously, that was before Burrow got hurt, so tough to get down another 100,000, probably on the other side there. That's one that just, you know, kind of chalk up to bad luck. And certainly another one, 110,000 on the Patriots, minus 1.5. So a couple out there that didn't win. Big one that did come through, 110,000 on the Saints, minus 3.5. That was also at BetMGM. And two on the Browns. People laying big money in the Browns against the Eagles. Someone bought a half a point, so from minus 3, Browns minus 3 to minus 2.5. $250,000 and another $100,000 wager at minus 3, also on the Browns. So a couple come home, couple don't. That's usually how it works with the big bets.
Oh, for sure.
Well, so Ben, you talked about stories. So this is my opportunity right now. I just want to share something here. I know we'll talk about some of the things that were good for the books and what was bad for the books. But let's talk about Denver, Miami. Now that was definitely one sided towards Miami, and I had Miami in that game, so I lost that game. But I had six different prop bets that I really felt like this was going to shape the narrative of what this game was going to look like. And prior to that last play, now I don't know how many people watched finished out that game. Prior to that last play, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I lost the Miami play, but I'm going to go 6-0 in my prop bets because this game went according to form until the Broncos decided to, instead of punt or even take a knee or even save safety, instead they throw a 60-yard pass on the last play of the game, which is complete. And that crushed my 6-0 day because I had a couple of unders with Drew Locke throwing under 252 for plus money. One was at 262 for some minus money. And that last play, I don't know if you guys paid attention, but did you see that last play of the game and how that shaped out? Because I know the books were loving that game from the Miami, from the Broncos side.
I did not. I feel like I'm privy to a therapy session here, but that, you know, that's all important for all of us. I didn't. And certainly I think one of the interesting things, right, with a lot of the prop bets that you know is it's all about incentives, and certainly all that they care about is winning the game, so they're going to do whatever they can. A lot of times they don't care if they catch that final pass or not, but as we know in gambling, and as James knows, just about every single time there's a play, there's probably some gambling ramification. This was, as James said, a giant one. Certainly everyone was on the Dolphins. 92% of the bets at points bet, 93% of the money, 95% of the money line bets. Again, that was only a spread of Dolphins -4, -3.5.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of the biggest decisions at William Hill, which is one of the bigger books, takes a lot of money. And again, it's the Dolphins, right? When's the last time you said the Miami Dolphins were one of the biggest decisions for the books on a Sunday? But they had won 5 games in a row. They'd covered 5 games in a row. Tua was looking good. They're facing the lowly Denver Broncos. Sorry, James, but they they haven't exactly lived up to expectation this season. And the Dolphins were 7-2 ATS coming into the game. Obviously, this was one that the books cleaned up on.
Other notable games that were good for the books?
Yeah, there were how much time we got?
About a minute.
there were a lot. The Colts was a big one. The Packers are always a public team. Actually, thought it was interesting to talk to a sportsbook director in Indiana, and he said they also needed the Colts. A lot of Packers fans actually driving down to Indianapolis. There's no fans at Lambeau, but there are fans at the Colts game. So they came in, they bet the Packers, then went and watched the game. But everywhere people were on the Packers there. And Washington, too. That was one where a lot of people had the Bengals, as well as the Sunday night game that you guys had discussed. 90% of the bets, 95% of the money at points bet, and everywhere else, basically. On the Chiefs, -7.5, -8. Raiders end up covering that game, and another good one for the books.
Yeah, good game to watch and good result there for the books. You going to stick around for the next segment for Monday Night Football?
I got you.
Okay, good, because I got a question for you and a question for James Salinas, because I just realized something about some tickets that I just cashed, and I want to see if I stumbled upon a betting angle that I didn't know about. That's coming up next right here on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network. BetMGM customers have a chance to win $100 when they place a $1 wager on the Rams or Tampa Bay to score a touchdown. Sign up and use bonus code VSIN100 to take advantage of this offer. Download the app today and use promo code VSIN100 to win $100 when you bet $1 on the Rams or Tampa to score a touchdown. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be at least 21 years old, located in Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, Tennessee, and West Virginia. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia and Tennessee. Call or text the red line at 800-889-9789. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. Welcome back to the program. It's Betting Across America presented by BetMGM. Mike Pritchard, James Salinas, and Ben Fox are with you for this final segment here on a Monday. So my question to you guys, so I had the Broncos over the Dolphins on a ticket, a couple of tickets actually, and reasons different from the ones I want to ask you about. So this information about what the books need in terms of the betting public and where's the money. So I just want to know, is that a possible betting angle to use that type of information when placing a sports wager, James?
Well, I think Josh Applebaum would say absolutely it is. I mean, you're talking about contrarian. So he's, I think Josh, and I totally understand from that standpoint when we're just talking about where is the money going so many times. You know, you guys are sitting at the beautiful South Point and all those other beautiful properties up and down the strip. You know, they don't build those huge skyscrapers because the public comes in and is always right. So from that standpoint, it might be when you're talking about where all the money's going, in this case, especially where the public money's going. So I think there's some of that differentiation too, is where's some more of the professional money coming from as opposed to some of the public money. We know the public, a lot of times they're going to bet with their hearts rather than their heads, and so they're just going to follow their team, and regardless of what the point spread is, they're cheering for the home team. You know, Ben was saying, sorry, James, that didn't look good as far as what was all the money was going towards Miami, because it's how the Broncos have played and the whoa Broncos this year. I could care less. I'm not a fan of any team. I'm all about cash and tickets, so I have no allegiance to any team. So for me, I don't have that bias going into it. For me, it's more so matchup. So I don't really follow too much of which way the numbers are going. But from that perspective, Pritch, when it comes to the public money and which way is that going, especially on big public teams where, you know, teams like Green Bay, teams like Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh's obviously playing very well and covering a number of spreads, but they're still going to back them regardless of what those numbers are from a public standpoint. You can make Pittsburgh right now a 10-point favorite over Baltimore, and people are still going to fire on Pittsburgh from betting with their hearts rather than their heads.
Yeah, and I'd agree with James. I think, you know, like we have at Veasan, we're trying to make everyone smarter. I think it's another piece of information to use, right? Yeah. So you kind of have your own handicap. You have some trends maybe you're looking at. You have some different places maybe you read. And then you see what the market looks like. And I think in general, again, nothing is 100%, certainly in gambling. But more times than not, when there's 90% of the bets and 90-plus percent of the money, that's usually not a good sign. You usually want to run the other direction. And I think that's when James is saying you get a little nervous once you start seeing that and you're on the same side as that. Doesn't mean it's not going to work out. It certainly can, and certainly in certain games like the Steelers, as an example, not 90% of the money, but the vast majority is going to be on them to beat and cover against the Jaguars.
Right.
They do. But once you're getting up to those numbers where everyone is on it, it's kind of like they think it's free money, generally doesn't work out well.
A question that I get to you guys is in regards to these large bets like 100,000 or 250K, like is there a difference between these bets and respected money bets? You see what I'm saying? Like, is this a public person that's placing these sizable bets, or is that somebody that's respected by the books?
You want me to take that one, James?
Yeah, go ahead. You start there, Ben.
In a word, yes. It's a public bettor. It's usually a house player who has some account, and they're also, you know, betting roulette and blackjack and other things for large sums of money. And they say, hey, I really like the Browns. I want to put down $250,000 on them. And hey, I don't really like that -3 thing. In case they win by a field goal, I want to bump it down to -2.5. Again, a lot of the times you can tell is because most people aren't going to be buying the half point. Right. Mm-hmm. And as we saw, it didn't matter. The Browns easily covered, you know, 2.5, 3, 3.5, any number there.
Sure.
So, yes, those are going to tend to be public bettors. Very rare that the books as well are going to extend that high a limit, certainly anywhere close to that. Five figures, probably not even necessarily to a sharp bettor.
Okay.
Yeah, and Mike, for me, my approach is I'm pretty much a flat bettor. So what does that mean? Just I'm betting the same amount of dollars on each play. Now, maybe I'm basically a nickel or a dime player is what I'm. Sometimes I'll step out if there's really something I feel like, regardless of wherever the money's going, I feel like I'd just absolutely love this spot. Maybe I'll pump it up a couple dimes. But for the most part, that's about it. Now, with props, I'm not putting as much on the props. Maybe more so those are consistently just the nickel. And it kind of depends on the price, too. Sometimes you have to pay a little more juice. Sometimes you're getting a good price and getting plus money on those things. But for me, I'm more of just a flat bettor. That means I'm just betting consistently the same amount regardless of what the game is.
Okay, great. I love this information, guys. Monday Night Football, we got a good one. The Rams in Tampa. This line is Tampa -4. I'll start with you, Ben. What are the books, where are they situated here for this game?
Yeah, so kind of as you would expect, the Bucs are one of the most public teams. Mm-hmm. And again, not something you would say a couple years ago, right? Necessarily with Jameis Winston.
Brady, yes.
Exactly. Tom Brady comes, Rob Gronkowski mm-hmm. comes. They are a public team this year. This open really Bucs 3.5. It's kind of bouncing between 3.5 and 4. It's actually up to 4.5 now, pretty much across the board. Majority of the bets on the Bucs, majority of the money also on the Bucs, majority of the money, about 77%. 40% of the bets at Bet Rivers on over 48, 48 and a half as well, which you would expect. But, and no one wants to watch a primetime game for the public and bet on the under. So they're generally going to be on the over. But curious, certainly, what James thinks of this game, too, because it is two good teams, not that high of a point spread. And last time we saw the Rams, you know, they had a pretty good win over the Seahawks, and the Bucks just dominated the Panthers in a game that was close in the first half, but they pulled away in the second half. But are you also on the same side here, James? Are you staying away from this
one? And I'm a little different. I'm not going to put a bet on this game because I have the Bucks as one of my Survivor picks. So now Survivor's starting to get interesting. We're down to 212 selections, or 212 entrants remaining. I have two of them with one pending tonight with the Bucks. And in this case, I took the Bucks from this standpoint. I really don't like the scheduling spot for the Rams. Not that they're not going to show up, but this is going to be their fifth trip so far this season out to the East Coast. So it's a lot of travel from that perspective. But also, I think a couple other things when it comes to the Rams is it's kind of a sandwich spot for them. Yeah, it's a big game. You're going to be on Monday Night Football. You're playing a good team with Tampa Bay. But it's a sandwich spot from the standpoint last week, big division win that they had at home against Seattle, followed by the next 2 weeks, they're going to be playing big division games, San Francisco and at Arizona. So scheduling standpoint, sometimes those things where, yeah, you think these teams are going to bring it and they're the urgency's there week in and week out. But from this sense, the Rams, there's not going to be a letdown from Los Angeles coming into this game, but the urgency just isn't there compared to what I think the urgency is on the other side for Tampa. You know, the Saints keep winning. They already lost the tiebreaker to the Saints, so the division's really a struggle. But because the Saints keep winning and the NFC is where it stands right now for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to continue to try to get themselves jockeying for some kind of playoff position, I think this is a big game from that standpoint. The other piece, too, is they've changed up their practice. They've been practicing at night because the last few games this season that they played a lot of primetime games and they haven't performed well on primetime. They're very aware of that. So Arians has changed up their practice schedule. They've been practicing at night. Feel like there's this trying to get their body clock set and right, ready to go and get after it from the get instead of falling behind and having to get back into these games. Coming out ready to perform, I think that weighs heavily on the minds for Tampa. They were embarrassed a couple weeks back on Sunday Night Football against those same New Orleans Saints, never in that game. So I think this is a big game from that standpoint to want to write themselves on national TV. So I like the Bucks from that perspective. But because I'm sitting right now, and again, this is me, this is my bias because of where I'm standing in the Circa Survivor. Like I'm not going to play anything else because my whole focus is just on the to win in advance and have the Bucks. Because if I can have two selections going into Thursday, that's going to totally change my strategy for what I do for the Thursday games because of the Survivor, the Thanksgiving games, those three games, that's all it is. It's its own separate week this week, so it's a completely different strategy for me. So that's where my focus is just on the Bucks to win this game outright.
Coach Arians must have heard me because several weeks ago on our show, I mentioned, you know, once is an occurrence, twice is a coincidence, three times is a pattern.
I like that.
Yeah, right. And so you have the Bucks in prime time, and Brady hasn't looked great, right? So you have a prop here, James, passing yards, Tom Brady, 293.5, which is pretty high against that Rams defense. And then Jared Goff at 275.5. What do you do with these props, guys?
Well, and you got, and so I'll quickly, I'm not going to touch the Brady. That's the one narrative where I couldn't, we talked about the Broncos. I was wrong on the side, but I was completely right with all the props and the narrative there, just figuring there's going to be very conservative game plans for both offenses. Right now, I'm not sure what the Bucks are going to do because we still don't feel like, I don't feel like I know what their identity is. That the game a couple weeks back against New Orleans where they played so poorly, they never ran the football, never adjusted in game. They just wanted to keep throwing it. I don't know what their game plan is going into this one. I suspect they're going to want some balance in this game, but because I just don't have a good handle on what their game plan is going into this game, I'm just not comfortable with those props with Tom Brady throwing the football tonight.
And I'd say that Brady one as well has come down. Okay. I think that was high. I think that was closer to 300 when it opened and now has come down some. Rams, obviously a good defense. The Bucks, I think, have the number one defense by DVOA for Football Outsiders. So should be a good matchup, certainly. And one thing, just to add on to James there, someone in Circa on Saturday had three entries, not one, not two, but three oversleep. They don't get any entries in.
Oh.
They are out. So three entries, James, there you go. Three fewer people to compete against.
Yeah, don't forget to set your alarm clock. Get yourself up, even if it's the middle of the afternoon. And remember, for Thanksgiving, the time frame is different. You got to get your picks in on Wednesday night for Thanksgiving for Survivor.
Yeah, great job today, James. We'll see you later on in the week. Great job to you, Ben Fox, as well. That'll do it for us. My guys in the desert, coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.